Well, over the last couple of weeks, we've looked at the generation, or how to generate the mind of bodhicitta, and what is meant by the mind of bodhicitta. And so there are these two methods for the generation of bodhicitta, and the first is the six cause and one effect method that we looked at 2 weeks ago. And then last week, we looked at the second method, that of equalizing and exchanging self with others. For any activity, to any practice, be a practice of the Mahayana Dharma, the motivation must be conjoined with bodhicitta. So what is then bodhicitta? It is the wish to strive to become the most skilled of guides, become a Buddha for the sake of others, for the sake of becoming a skilled guide to lead others to attain their own enlightenment. And when this mind of bodhicitta arises within one in a way that is uncontrived or spontaneous, then one is said to have generated bodhicitta within oneself. For all of us, we have generated this wish that may all beings be freed from suffering and attain a lasting state of happiness, and may we become a Buddha so that we can actually lead beings to such a state. So this way of thinking is something we do generate intentionally. However, this mind is of very little strength. It dissipates and fades away very easily, and it certainly isn't the dominating motivation in all our thoughts and physical and verbal activities. And the reason for this is our way of thinking is still dominated by the self-cherishing mind, this mind that has as its core motivation one's own welfare, this wish that may things go the way I want them to, may other things be avoided because I don't want them. So this mind of self-cherishing that places the achievement of one's own happiness at the forefront of every thought, activity, physical activity or verbal communication. This dominates us. And it's from this selfish attitude of the self-cherishing mind that all our afflictive minds, such as attachment and anger and jealousy and pride, arise. And it's because of this prevalence of the self-cherishing mind that we don't have a strong and a stable wish to benefit others. However, if we manage to overcome the self-cherishing mind, exchanging it for rather an other cherishing mind, then our outlook is completely transformed. When a person comes under the influence of the other cherishing mind, while that is their dominant mind within their motivation, then their overriding wish is, may I bring happiness to others. May others only experience happiness. May they be freed of suffering. May every physical activity or my verbal communication, may it bring this about. May all beings abide in stable, lasting happiness. So this is a very different way of thinking. This is a way of thinking dominated by another cherishing mind. And when a person has given rise to or has generated this other cherishing mind within themselves, they will relate very differently to the problems and difficulties that one encounters throughout one's day. They will discard them, seeing them as insignificant. Because what is now important is not whether we get our way or things go in the way we want them to or not, but whether we achieve lasting happiness for the sake of others. This, the welfare of others, is one's primary motivation. So therefore, the problems and hardships that we experience in our everyday life, these are easily discarded and seen now in a new context, seen as insignificant, as of no importance. So this is what we looked at last week, when we looked at the practice of equalizing and exchanging self with others, which refers to exchanging this current dominant mind of this self-cherishing attitude for rather an other-cherishing attitude. It's being under the influence of the self-cherishing mind that everything we engage in is motivated to achieve our own happiness. So therefore we're motivated to achieve what we want, we're motivated to push aside what gets in the way of things going the way we want them. We want to have success in our careers, we want to have success in our studies, we want to have a good reputation, we want to be looked at well by others, considered well by others, we want to have influence over others. We are concerned about our wealth and our material comfort. And this wish for our own happiness, this does get extended beyond ourselves, but when it goes beyond ourselves, it includes those that we consider part of our group, primarily our own loved ones, our intimate circle of our family and close friends, and slightly broader to the group that we identify with as well. The other cherishing mind, that is completely the opposite. There one's genuine wish is may others be successful in all their endeavors. May others have good reputation. May others live in material comfort and without worry and stress. May others be able to provide for their loved ones. May others become influential and have renown. And this is not just a mere expression of a way of thinking, but it is heartfelt and genuine. So the self-cherishing mind, this narrow, limited way of relating to the world, it is from this that all our problems and difficulties arise. The opposite mind, this other cherishing mind, this mind which is wide and expansive with a far-sighted outlook, from this only happiness comes, joy comes, for both oneself and others. This is quite a radical way of thinking, something that is really very far beyond what is the accepted wisdom in the world. And when people hear about this radical way of thinking of this other cherishing mind, then it's quite likely doubts will arise within them, thinking, but if I'm not concerned about my own situation, then my situation is going to become quite desperate. For example, if I don't have the motivation to study hard, I'm not going to study hard. I'll remain uneducated. If I don't have the motivation to make great effort in my career, my career is not going to be successful, and I probably will end up unemployed. And this, to some degree, perhaps it makes logical sense, because if one doesn't have the thought to, for example, buy clothes, one won't buy any clothes. One may will end up naked and a beggar. So one may well have several doubts about this way of thinking. Furthermore, if one doesn't have this wish that is concerned with oneself, then one might think, one won't have the thought to accumulate virtue, to purify negativities, to overcome and subdue these afflicted minds and eventually eliminate them completely and become a Buddha. In other words, one won't engage in any practice in one's life, one will not achieve anything with this life.
Kyo shivu di ki liya, kala te ya, dulo te ya, dini ki tono roa che che, kondzo kanga se gu du, kondzo li digi ji chung gu du sanpe ki, shi kondzo digi chung gu du sanpe samlo di yin ki, o dini ki kondzo li digi ting ya, kondzo ki kanga se ya dunda la, mi ane, pen chur tup shi che ya, pen chur tup shi che, jikin sanpe samlo da. O dini ki, Tini,
If one has such doubts, that's understandable. But those doubts, though, are incorrect. Because actually, in fact, if one overcomes the self-cherishing mind, not only is there no loss for oneself, but having exchanged it for the other cherishing mind, incredible benefit comes to both oneself as well as others. So if one has generated the other cherishing mind, placing the welfare of others at the forefront of one's motivation, then one will want others to experience lasting, stable happiness, a happiness that is completely freed of suffering. But how to do so? Because this mere wish on its own is not going to lead to a change in the circumstances of others. The only way that any suffering being can transform themselves and become a being that abides in lasting happiness is to eliminate the causes of suffering and accumulate the causes for happiness. And how to do so? They have to be taught what those causes are, as well as the methods to accumulate them and eliminate them. And moreover, they have to be taught in a way that is perfectly in accordance with their own unique personality. So with this understanding then, conjoined with the other cherishing mind, then the person wanting to help will make great efforts in their own spiritual endeavors, in their studying, their meditation, etc., wanting to do it for the welfare of others, wanting to become the most skilled of guides themselves, so that they can teach from the basis of knowledge and meditative experience gained on the basis of that knowledge. So therefore, in order to benefit others, this person will not sit around, but will make great efforts in their spiritual development. And then, and not in the spiritual context, but the worldly context, the same motivation to bring benefits into the lives of others will lead the person to thinking, how can I help others on a temporary basis? So others have many material needs, and they often lack the resources to sustain themselves or to have the freedom to engage in spiritual development. I want to help others to overcome their material needs. I want to help others to have sufficient resources so that they can freely engage in spiritual development. In order to do that, I need an abundance of material resources, and then I can help others. And then with such a motivation, one will engage in worldly work as well, accumulating material resources that one then can use to benefit others. And then also in terms of one's physical health, the motivation that's dominated by the other cherishing mind, one will know that in order to benefit others, one needs to be physically and mentally healthy. And therefore, one will eat sufficient nutritious food, engage in exercise, etc., but not with the motivation to have an attractive form, but rather so that one can be healthy and be of benefit to others. So therefore, we can see from these illustrations that having a mind dominated by the other cherishing attitude will lead one to engage in great effort for the sake of others, and in fact, because of the strength of the other cherishing mind, one will make far greater effort than those who are just under the selfish attitude of the self-cherishing mind. Those under the influence of the other cherishing mind will make ever with the greatest of efforts in their study, their meditation, as well as their engagement in worldly activities. Under the influence of the other cherishing mind, one's heartfelt wish was it will be to become a being that can lead others to their own enlightenment, lead others to a state where they become liberated from suffering, a state liberated from cyclic existence. And with such a motivation, that motivation will infuse every activity, whether it's eating, whether it's engaging in worldly activities, whether it's engaging in practice. Well, this motivation will be conjoined with every activity. In other words, everything that one does will be motivated to bring about both temporary but certainly ultimate, lasting happiness. So with this motivation of bodhicitta, this motivation of wanting to become a Buddha for the sake of others, then one will engage with great vigor in practice. Because without engaging in practice, how will one spiritually develop? Without developing the minds of the Buddha Dharma within oneself, how will one become a Buddha? How will one become the most skilled of guides? So therefore, in order to fulfill the motivation of the mind of bodhicitta, one will strive to accumulate virtue and to eliminate completely all faults.
当然，这错杀这个讲过，这错杀些的了，错的了，虽然没有错的，也是有错些，你例如啊，其实当然做虽然没有错些的，啥话了，也，然后呢，也关注了，缺乏培训，那你这关注了，第二把的缺乏培训，错杀些，啊，嘛，心间，心间里啊，那，金巴达呀的，那，现在就是说没有错的，那，这，弱级别错的，那，错杀些，你用过了吧？
The accumulating virtue and eliminating faults. So of those two, accumulating virtue, this is divided into two types. There's the accumulation of merit and the accumulation of wisdom. So looking first at the accumulation of merit. So this would include making offerings with a mind of faith to the three jewels, as well as practicing generosity towards suffering sentient beings.
当缺乏培训，错杀也得了；当缺乏培训，又得了呀。安尼，俺这个操心生活，操心操杀啥个心？俺是等到了马上得啥个，得啥的了，心那个罗啥子的，心那个罗的，等到得啥心那个罗，别的那些，俺这个呀，关注了缺乏培训，俺这个给我杀活的，等那个缺乏培训又得了，俺那操心生活的。那等俺这个，咱年轻人家过足要的，那这些工作就是什么的，些啥了哇？现在那个，俺就三六当些年轻人，三六多年，年轻人家活了三六当些。其实俺的年轻人家操心的怕，俺就三六十二得些的，俺就。 삼는
In order to make offerings with his mind or faith to the three jewels, then one has as an object to make offerings to the merit field. So the purpose here is to accumulate merit, to accumulate a virtue in order to spiritually progress. So one then makes offerings with faith to the three jewels in the aspect of the merit field. So we've already spoken about in some detail over the last few weeks, about the motivation that one engages in this practice with, and that is the motivation of bodhicitta. So with this motivation of bodhicitta, one engages in meditating on the merit field in order to cultivate, to train and develop one's way of thinking. Whether this practice that one is about to embark on is one of the Mahayana Dharma or not depends on the motivating mind. So if this motivating mind is conjoined with the two principal minds of the Mahayana, then it's a practice of the Mahayana Dharma. Without these, then it cannot be called a mind of the Mahayana. And these two principal minds are the mind of bodhicitta and the wisdom realizing emptiness. So the first, that mind of bodhicitta, we've already looked at in some detail. And the influence of this Mahayana motivation, one then engages in the meditation on the merit field. So in this meditation, one will invite one's Lama to before oneself. But before one invites one's Lama, then one needs to create a suitable abode for one's Lama to reside. So this is something that we have we do in our ordinary life. Before we invite someone, we need to prepare a place that they are going to come to. And we certainly do it here as well. For example, before one invites Lama Zopa to come here, one makes sure that we have a place that is suitable for him to abide. So that is the same process that one engages in this meditation relating to the merit field. So before we can invite our Lama, we need to create somewhere suitable for him to abide. But because of who the Lama is, the great importance of the Lama, somewhere ordinary would not be suitable. Rather, somewhere extraordinary is what is required. So therefore, one starts out by reflecting on emptiness. And that is reflected here in the text on page 7, near the bottom, where we see the two words Om Sabhava, or to put it in the full length, Om Sabhava Sudha Sabhadhamma Sabhasudhaham. All phenomena are empty of inherent existence. So just to say here, from here until the end of this section, it wasn't translated in the original text, perhaps because it's got so many abbreviations, so it's a little bit clunky. Anyway, so this is a new translation, but it's got a lot of and so forth in the Tibetan, so it will be changing a little bit as we go over this. With this motivation of bodhicitta, this motivation to lead all sentient beings, to train and guide all sentient beings so that they too arise in their own individual enlightenment, one now engages in this practice to accumulate virtue so as to fulfill this to fulfill the aim of the motivation of bodhicitta. So here, with this first the Sanskrit line, Om Sabhava Sudha Sabhadhamma Sabhava Sudhaham, all phenomena are empty of inherent existence. And here then the meditation is that all phenomena, every single phenomenon, does not exist in the way that it appears. If one investigates to see if the phenomenon, if any single phenomenon or groups of phenomena exist in the way that they appear, one will find nothing at all. One will find they are empty of existing in the way that they appear. They are empty of existing inherently. In fact, all that remains when one investigates is merely emptiness. And again, the line here in the text, all phenomena are empty of inherent existence. One meditates that nothing exists with even the slightest inherent nature. All phenomena are empty of inherent existence. And then from this state of emptiness arises the meditation. It's at one's eye level, and this is as we're seeing here in the text, from within the state of emptiness, in the sky before me, is a vast and expansive jeweled throne held aloft by 8 mighty snow lions.
Na dene shuche di khang le ya ane me do pe ma sam dang ore s me do pe ma shi ane me do pe ma di khang le ya ane da bi ji ho ka bu ko ho shi sam ta ane di khang le ya ka wo di khang le ya ji ma bo wo ko ko ho shi ni me ji ho
Then he held aloft, here we go, a jeweled throne held aloft by eight mighty snow lions, upon which is a variegated lotus and moon disc. So on top of the throne is a lotus, on top of that is a disc that is a white moon disc, and on top of that is a red sun disc.
Tadelia me shuti di galia me do pe mache dela da wi ji ho che dela ni mi ji ho sum do wa ndi ga ru chung go la na me do pe ma ji nge jung sung go re je nge jung de ne ana da wi ji wo di ge cha shu sem chung go re se de ne ni mi ji wo di ge an tong yi do be she la sung go re che sa dela ngejung jasem yang de be tawasum chungor chundun dire jisan ngadu ba samdaya la ane meto pema den dewe ji ho dine ni me ji ho ta di shugden la ma son la dire jisan sa ji gi lama sa ji gi gyula ngar yo ne ngejung jasem yang de be tawasum yo ro wa di chungor re jisan ti shugden dile du samdaya di di sum di di chungor re jere.
In this visualization, there are three particularly important objects that have been visualized. The lotus, on top of which is the white moon disk, and on top of that is the, maybe we not usually would say, yellow sun disk. And so these three have a particular symbolic importance. The lotus, this symbolizes the mind of definite emergence, or the mind that renounces samsara. Then the white moon disc, this symbolizes the mind of bodhicitta. And then the yellow sun disc, this symbolizes the wisdom realizing emptiness, or the correct view. And these three qualities, the mind of definite emergence, the mind of bodhicitta, and the mind that is the wisdom realizing emptiness, these are all within the continuum of the Buddha Lama. These qualities are within the continuum of the Buddha Lama that is going to be visualized.
As I met up in my city, Kawaki was in two damn that the Nigu and Nayaki was. She's not the Nayaki or the Metopema, just said the Chunyo damn Nayaki or the Metopema de Lia, the damn that Chunyo, Guinea Makova, got his
And why is a lotus used to symbolize the mind of definite emergence? In the natural world, the lotus grows out of mud in a pool and grows up above, rising above the mud and the mud of the pool, and it opens in a beautiful flower that is clean, that is unstained by that mud. So this then is similar to the mind of definite emergence, the mind that has renounced the suffering of cyclic existence, that is committed to definitely emerging from this misery of the sufferings of samsara. So in the same way that a mind that has generated definite emergence is a mind that is going to arise out of the mud and the suffering of samsara, and become completely stainless and pure, leaving behind all the filth, the misery, the suffering that is cyclic existence.
Mm-hmm. 차위 누가다 차와 치드네 대위 나와셔 대위 시트니 전 수불이야 디지리 제용으로 니나신 자슈 샘디기 시한 샘자 탐지기 사주고 봐 토벌 지인 샘비기 자슈 샘디 시한이야 디지티고르스 디지투고르 두에 진자 아니 자슈 샘디 선발했어 니마디기 가서 니마디기 차오 슈치 차위 장신자 디기엔 지게 장카리네 차와 장신디기 매바 치투고 치니 매바 치투고와 언디나시 다 동이드베 셰럽디기 마 저기 강아제기 녀모 두숨 차상 셰럽디기 동이드베 셰럽고미도 매바 치투고와 데네자 니미기 되게는 아 동이드베 셰럽 선나로 되네 레시레
Then the symbolism behind the, or the meaning of the symbolism behind the moon and sun disk is that, so the moon reflects light that is clear but cool, whereas the light that comes from the sun, this is very hot. So the symbolism then of the cool light that is reflected from the moon. This is likened to the mind of bodhicitta, which overcomes the heat of suffering that is tormenting suffering sentient beings, and this cooling of the suffering of sentient beings leads to happiness being attained by beings, and the happiness that beings attain, the lasting and stable happiness that beings attain, comes from the activities of those who are bodhicitta in their continuum, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So therefore, the a moon disk symbolizes bodhicitta, this cooling light of the moon that pacifies and cools the heat of the sufferings of cyclic existence. Then the sun disk, this symbolizes the wisdom realizing emptiness. Of course, the heat from the sun then is bright and powerful and burning, and this heat can destroy. In particular, it destroys the three poisons, the afflicted minds. And this, in other words, the wisdom realizing emptiness, which is the direct antidote to all suffering, to all the afflicted minds. This here is symbolized by the sun, because the heat of the sun can burn and destroy. So this then is the meaning of the symbolism behind these three objects.
Tawangamba, dene serna, dene tesum, ngaja se yorwa, or disuvi nazulia, chasali gangatea dan, and chiki, je, number sachu, that dene kora kochu chasan, disuvi liyo chigurwa. Tina, dili jedi, bene, sengi chimpu jerwa, shukri aja, sengi jerwa, sengi jedi, garatungoras, and dene gi jigba, nazul gangate, and jigba jedile, drawa tungores, drawa.
To look at further symbolism within this visualization. So it's mentioned here that this expansive jeweled throne is held aloft by eight mighty snow lions. So these snow lions then too carry particular symbolic meaning. So all the suffering the cause of all the suffering that sentient beings, that pervade sentient beings, or rather dominate sentient beings, are our varying afflicted minds. And here we think of eight afflicted minds. So they're the three root poisons of anger, attachment, and ignorance, as well as jealousy, miserliness, pride, doubt, and wrong views. So these eight then are symbolize the entire array of the afflictions, and these are the afflictions that cause all us ordinary sentient beings all our pain and our misery. The lions then, lions represent the frightening away, the elimination, the frightening away of these afflicted minds that torment sentient beings, because just in the same way, if we see a lion, especially if it's not in the zoo, then certainly fear will arise within us. So likewise, these eight snow lions represent the overcoming of these eight fears. And these eight fears then are these eight afflicted minds, those of anger, attachment, ignorance, jealousy, miserliness, pride, doubt, and wrong views. So these are overcome by these, or frightened away by these snow lions.
ཁྱི ཕྱད མམ གསྲ 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 གསྲ
Now, if you take this, the meaning of this, of the imagery, and you relate it to then what we have before us. So before us in the merit field, the center of the merit field, is this throne held held aloft by the snow lions, and upon that the lotus, the moon and sun disk. So what are the minds that are absent from this merit field? These are the suffering, afflicted minds, those minds of anger, attachment, ignorance, jealousy, pride, miserliness, doubt and wrong views. They're absent. What minds are there? Those of the wisdom realizing emptiness, bodhicitta and definite emergence.
Mm-hmm. どうして寒いしたん。 다시
Now we've generated this visualization with an understanding of the meaning. And now we come to generate the central figure, the figure as seated upon this throne. And that is, as we see here in the text, seated upon it in the aspect of Buddha Shakyamuni, who is inseparable from your Lama, who teaches you the path. So in other words, one visualizes one's own spiritual friend, one's own spiritual teacher, the teacher who teaches us how to cultivate the paths of the Buddha Dharma within ourselves. We visualize him before us on the lion throne, but we visualize him in the visual aspect of Buddha Shakyamuni, in the posture as we see in the statue, wearing the robes of a monk, holding a baking bowl with his right hand touching the earth. So we're visualizing Buddha Shakyamuni with the understanding that in essence Buddha Shakyamuni is inseparable from our Lama, then in essence they are indistinguishable.
And Dandala Digare Lagorasana Chisang Azulya Chishin Azu Lama Lamdinken Kivishin di Garilan Dumba Sanye Jumlin Digi Mo Dumba Sanye Jumlin Digi Ma Juishene Number Twenty Jubi Juba Twenty Nung Azulya Chike Kivishin Number Twenty Juishen Azu Lam Dumba Nahare Chisanza Mola Harsin Dumba Sanye Jumlin the Radio Regis Chisan Azu Tonya get Ben Azu Yaurimichu, the Supermichu, Damazu, Mazu, I think as a middle chibar, Tongu, or Tina, Kongola, Tempasaki, Tubiki, Minigit number, Dituin, Changa, Lamtunga, nowadays. Now I don't want Tempasan Chimden to get Junior Wanza, Mordi, Arasan Chimden, the Ojiba Chadero. Since then, is a rang Lamting Lamadi, Mora Lamai, Lamadi, Imbala number, Tempasaki, Chaki to Okomiko, Kim Zenwit.
So here, understanding with this visualization is that our spiritual friend our teacher is in essence indistinguishable from Buddha Shakyamuni. So that another way to look at that is our teacher is an emanation of Buddha Shakyamuni. So we can understand this in relation to many of the great beings in this world, whether it's His Holiness or Lama Zopa. They look human, just like us, but we can understand that in essence they are inseparable from Buddha Shakyamuni. So this is the understanding that we should have thus far in the visualization.
Tene temba shakyo tibi tuga ne ya, weser ya, gaan le ya, ane ya gaan le ya, ten le ya, tre yung du, ane weser di gaan le ya, ane jik gyawa doshi shang, gyawa doshi shang tang di, ane ma thakwa le ya, ane jik nyamlin jilab gyubi lama se de, nyamlin jilab gyubi lama di ki chasang shu du ba de, ane sam go le se.
De kongi ku gyabla.
Du kong.
Yes, de kosam. Gang gang. Then one visualizes further light rays coming from the heart of Buddha Shakyamuni, who is in essence our Lama, and light rays going above his head, and they're seeing all the Geluk lineage Lamas, starting with Dukunda De Gangla Sude, starting with Vajradhara and all the Geluk lineage Lamas.
Lama nyamlin jilab jubil lama siya tiki mongguyo rwa da nyamlin jilab da dora chan ma nyamlin rinpa jubil liga rwa nyamlin jilab jubil lama
siya guluki lama sungme fe
gilupa gilupa da nyingma kishim lama jubil siya nyamlin jilab jubil lama
so nothing about gulukia so it's lama Dorje Chang or Vajradhara and all the lamas of the lineage of blessings, something like that.
That in there, now Tugane, and we say in about two, and Ya Delia, Yawachamba, Yawachamba, and the Yawachambig, Tagolia, and the Papa Tomel also begin, Jessin, Jugi Lamanam, Chasan Shuyo, Badi, Mabache, what is it?
And in further light rays emanates from the heart of the central deity. And to the right of the central deity, so from the perspective of the meditator to the left, but to the right of the central deity, and there is Buddha Maitreya, surrounded by all the lamas of the lineage of vast conduct, and this we're seeing now at the very last line on page
7. The key de letter, Jizun Chambe Yavache. That Jizun Chambe Yanga Tawalia, Kumbu Lujubla so big and Dine, somewhat Tawa Taviki, Yamling Ma, Nangi, Taviki Piketa, Lamanam Chazan Shudi, but Gwane Shubadi, some Tangorejer.
And then to the left of Buddha Shakyamuni, to his left, then from light rays emanate out and surrounding Manjushri are the lineage lamas of the profound view, such as the Arya Nagarjuna.
That is, Rangi Lamigi Tumbasaya to be Dungi Chua Dela, and Rangi Takivi Shinyan Chua Tsedilia Sosuke Lama, and Chu Yunga Lama Chasan Delia, and Chu Yubame Bashi Wadis.
visualized before Buddha Shakyamuni are all one's teachers from this life.
And then
Then surrounding, so not a, a low level, surrounding the visualized deities, visualized beings, will be first the all the yidams of the four classes of Tantra.
Then
And then one visualizes at the next layer all the Buddhas of the ten directions. And thereafter the Bodhisattvas. And then progressing further, you have the solitary realizers, the hearers, and the dakas and dakinis.
And then before
all the varying beings now in one's visualization, one visualizes a table. Upon that are various dharma texts that they would propound, that they would teach. Then one generates the wish that may all, this vast array of the holiest of beings before one, may they observe ourselves as suffering sentient beings with their love and their compassion. So again, I just read this paragraph at the bottom of page 7 and the top of page 8, but we've already done that. And up as far as we see near the top of page 8, invite them. So again, let's now read what we have here on page 8 in italics. So in the Tibetan, it has what we have written here and ends with and so forth. And he's now, because he knows this, he's also read the and so forth. So I'll read what we have here in the book, as well as the additional three lines, because it's actually two four-line verses. So it's going to change a little bit, and I'll be adding three more lines. Although the completely pure ultimate nature of all phenomena is unfluctuating, with immeasurable compassion you see all migrators in the 10 directions. Engaging in the vast enlightened activities of all conquerors, lamas of the three times, together with your entourages, please come here. The protector of all sentient beings without exception, the deity that subdues a host of Mayas, that knows correctly all realities without exception, Bhagavan, together with your entourage, please come here. So again, I will explain it and then I'll repeat the additions as we go through it.
당한주기 즉 파바로 지르는 능력을 믿기 말하신 당한주기 야 숙사다 차산 저지에 차바이 당한주기 야 중앙주 최후 부고도 최후 부에 던달이야 한 최후 시가 피로지 사실 중앙주기 넘긴 되는 게 시야죠로 한 던달로 지르시야.
You can see a relation to what is happening here with how we behave in our everyday life. If there's someone that we want to invite, especially if it's someone that we hold in high esteem, we'll make sure everything is prepared just right. And when it's of a standard that we feel comfortable with, then we will invite them. And we won't invite them in just any old way, but we'll do it in a way that has a relationship with the value that we show towards these people, the value in which we hold these people.
Mm. 那上界是的，那其实那么大，这些活了，那么大区域应该没有讲土界前面做了确实是一个事了。再的开始我们说呢，上界是的，那么大是的，却他们这人性具备东北东西是吧？那么大区域应该是的，却他们这人性具备东北的东西这里啊，这些都两把下去，给的那两把下下把的是，两把马下把就只有马的了，那么大区域应该没有讲是。 其实，那么大水银子的，却他们这人性具备东北东吧？嗯，这里呀，那商业是给的那这里两百下呗，这些都两百下下吧？是。但两百下吧，来的两百下吧，的两百下下，的那人家这里马上把钱呢，那个说的，人家这里没有把钱，两百下下别安呢，俺土地前面做了确实是的，做，主办那把大，马上端进来，什么钱？
巧聚也，那什么叫车上里啊？那这江巴的这位团呢？俺这江巴那所团呢？去对接，俺先来第一主要的，第一主要刚刚说，先什么讲就过完了之后，他把他们就准备过完了，俺那过完几个月些了。对，等等，看看，嗯，几个月？几个月？数码的。你。OK。那么在去年两百元，土地前面做了确实是的。
So
looking then at the first two lines here, although the completely pure ultimate nature of all phenomena is unfluctuating, with immeasurable compassion you see all migrators in the 10 directions. So the first line then, the completely pure ultimate nature of all phenomena. So this refers to that all phenomena, without exception, are completely empty of inherent existence. They do not exist inherently in any way at all. And this realization, that all phenomena are empty of inherent existence, is realized at all times by a Buddha, and a Buddha's mind never fluctuates from this realization. It's not a realization that the Buddha sometimes has and sometimes doesn't have, but it's a continuous realization. And then that then moves into the second line. Whilst having this unfluctuating, whilst realizing all phenomena as being inherently existent, at the same time, so unfluctuating, at the same time, he observes or he sees or he realizes, same word, that all migrators in the 10 directions with his immeasurable compassion. So in other words, the Buddha has the minds of compassion, or bodhicitta, or the minds of compassion, and the minds of the wisdom realizing emptiness, both of them together.
那三界里啊，东西来这些都两百了，三的这些都定义经济，这些都东西来两百下呢，得两百下的嘛，看我现在，那现在来去送亚当，突然的三亿元的了，三亿元的了，现在三界了嘛，都现在苏界里啊，那讲究三百，可是多过徒步云南啊，东西来这些都两百下的了，把下怕咱嘛下去呢，这些都东西来两百下的把咱们下去的，这些嘛都。
The qualities being described in these two lines are unique to a Buddha. Not even a bodhisattva, or even the great bodhisattvas, the Arya bodhisattvas, have the qualities that are described here. So they, for example, Arya bodhisattvas, of course, they're bodhisattvas, so they have great compassion at all times for all sentient beings. And when they in the meditative equipoise, that is directly realizing emptiness, they too realizing the emptiness of phenomena. But these minds do fluctuate. The unique quality here of a Buddha is that a Buddha, whilst realizing emptiness directly, is also able to engage in the activities under the influence of the minds of great compassion, such as teaching the Dharma, practicing generosity, and so forth. Whereas certainly ordinary beings, but basically any non-Buddha, from the highest of bodhisattvas down to ordinary beings, cannot have those two minds present at the same time. Even the highest bodhisattvas, that they cannot engage in the activities of a bodhisattva, such as teaching the Dharma, whilst directly realizing emptiness. These minds, for all non-Buddhas, will fluctuate, sometimes directly realizing emptiness, or having a lower realization of emptiness, and then sometimes engaging in the virtuous activities. A Buddha is a being that is perfect, a being that has perfected all good qualities and has perfectly eliminated all faults, so that there's not even the slightest trace of the slightest of faults. And this is a state that only Buddhas abide in. Even the high bodhisattvas, certainly the ordinary bodhisattvas, and of course ordinary beings, have not achieved any of these qualities to that same state, in that they are beings who are still perfecting their good qualities, who still are having to eliminate the varying layers of stains and of faults. It is only a Buddha who has perfected all their good qualities and completely eliminated all faults. So due to abiding in this perfect state, they are able to directly realize emptiness whilst engaging in various enlightened activities such as teaching the Dharma. Whereas all beings who are non-Buddhas, they still have qualities to develop and faults to eliminate, and therefore they have obstacles to being able to engage in activities for the benefit of others whilst realizing emptiness directly. Then the third and fourth lines at the end of this first verse. So I'm just changing the translation a little bit of the third line. Expanding in the vast enlightened activities of all the conquerors, lamas of the three times together with your entourages, please come here. So here one is expressing one's invitation to all one's lamas who are in the aspect of the Buddhas, who are in essence, not in the aspect, sorry, who are in essence all the Buddhas, may they, or in the essence indistinguishable from all the Buddhas, may they together with their entourages come before one, and do so with in order that we may act in accordance with their wishes, namely to make offerings with respect and with faith towards them, and thereby accumulate virtue to aid us on our own path of spiritual progression. And so that was the fourth line. I should have done the third line first, sorry. So then the third line refers to the enlightened activities of all the conquerors. So the Buddhas are at all times engaging in various enlightened activities. So the enlightened activities of the Buddha are performed by their body, by their speech, by their mind. And for example, when one requests blessings from the Buddha, then through the enlightened activities of the Buddha, one would receive their blessings. And this, and the engagement in these enlightened activities, whether it's teaching, whether it's giving blessings, whether it's physically interacting with beings, these are done are continuously done at all times by Buddhas, whilst directly realizing emptiness, as well as engaging in these activities. So that's the link then between the third line and the previous two lines. And now in the fourth line then, one requests that they come before one, so that one can make offerings to accumulate virtue, to aid one on one's own spiritual progression towards enlightenment. In other words, may they come forward so that we can act in accordance with their innermost wishes and spiritually develop, head towards achieving a state of lasting happiness.
That
Then for the fifth line, I'll change it slightly, the protector of all sentient beings without exception. So the protector here refers to one's Lama, who's indistinguishable from the Buddha. He's the protector of all beings, which means it's through his guidance, his care, that he is able to guide beings to in a way so that they are protected from all the sufferings of samsara, as well as guiding them so, to protect them so that they don't fall into the peace of nirvana. So he is able to protect one from all mistaken paths, all sufferings. And this is who one is now making a request to in the fifth line, the protector of all sentient beings without exception.
Then Jigle down Yum won't get Rama Mebang Sochi, Shirukura, Shiva, Chiva de la, Chivu du Lavore, Shiru de la, Chidagu du Sor, Chidagu du Sore. Now, young as the Chi, Yamlin Jigalia, and Jigang, Jig, Sambang and Batone, and Jig, Delia, never Parshet Dangi, Lee, Jigbu, said Yoris Yore, and Denigi de la, the Sudinigi, Saro, she didn't answer. 确实还是要把这些经给的那个拉入去，因为呢，这是俩，那呢，这一部读写，这一部读写就结果了。其实呢，读写的时候，这了读写了过了。其实呢，到底读写的没把说的，可能说过了是呢，俺这个拉没给，俺说了确定，俺这个伢们这样读，俺这个牛毛读书的嘛，帮都帮过了。其实俺牛毛读书的没把说，其实。 牛没把水过，牛没读书没把水的，那你叫我起码，那你来到牛没忘记碰破的没把查出过来，来到牛没忘碰破的没把查上呢，来到牛没忘记，那我说些要嘛的，哎，那天天没呢，那天天给来到牛没把车上绑上来呢，那你怕就想起三百万把的，那俺说牛不给呢，牛不给呢，用过嘛的，其实牛不住宿过嘛的，反正现在人家。 다 dene dunga mise ba nyongko e kanga nyongko e chasa nyongmo ba tila dene chasa di mewa suyken di lami ki ngan su le labche kyab chwe ten nyamlen che ju di pang chasa mewa suy tu kore chasa dene henza an dhusum sa ki ngowa lama di ki ane kar su re ngan su ki nyongmo ba chasa maa mewa suyken ki ane chika kar su re sare esu ta di ngan su ki chotu gyu pa si u chik re si ngan su mi le ya ka la yin sa din
Then we look at, now we go to the lines that we don't have. And here we're continuing to look at the qualities of our teacher. So the next line, the sixth line, the deity that subdues a host of Maras. The deity that subdues a host of Maras. So the deity here, this refers to our teacher who's inseparable from Buddha Shakyamuni, or from all the Buddhas, and visualizing him in the aspect of Buddha Shakyamuni. So in this line he's referred to as the deity that subdues a host of Maras. And the Maras here, or in English would be demons. So this refers to the four Maras, or the four demons. So what these then refer to are the Mara of the aggregates, the Mara of the afflictions, the Mara of death, and the Mara of the sons of the gods. So the meaning behind these, though, is what is important. So the Maya or the demon of the aggregates refers to these very physical, mental, contaminated aggregates that we have. The Maya of the afflictions refers to our afflicted minds, and that cause all our suffering. And the Maya of death refers to uncontrolled death, that death is something that befalls all of us in a way that we have no control over. It's not something that we have transcended. And then the Maya of the sons of the gods, this then refers to that when one is engaging in virtuous practice, then some beings who have a negative attitude towards the Dhamma may intentionally cause problems for the practitioner. So that is the meaning of this fourth Maya. So our teacher is the deity that subdues a host of Mayas. So what that actually means is not that he is the one subduing them for us, but it is through receiving his teachings and putting those teachings into practice ourselves that we ourselves destroy the four Mayas. And how so? Through cultivating wisdom, we destroy the Maya of the afflictions, because it's wisdom, the wisdom realizing emptiness, that destroys the afflictions. With the afflictions destroyed, one will never take rebirth with contaminated aggregates again. And thereby, the Maya of the aggregates, the aggregates, that is also destroyed. Moreover, through following receiving and following the teachings of one's teacher, one realizing emptiness, one destroys the afflictions, destroys the contaminated aggregates, and thereby one also destroys the aggregate, the demon of death, the Maya of death, because one will no longer take uncontrolled rebirth. One will have uncontrolled death. Sorry, one will no longer. One has transcended ordinary death. And then, fourthly, through implementing the teachings or training in the teachings of one's teacher, one destroys the Maya of the sons of the gods. Those beings that try to cause harm to practitioners, they are not able to harm one because of the qualities one has developed, independence on receiving teachings from one's Lama and putting them into practice within oneself. The remaining lines, the seventh and eighth, that knows correctly all realities without exception, Bhagavan, together with your entourage, please come here. So these four lines then, the protector of all sentient beings without exception, the deity that subdues the host of Mayas, that knows correctly all realities without exception, Bhagavan, together with your entourage, please come here. So this seventh line, that knows correctly all realities without exception, means that the Buddhas at all times know or realize the emptiness of all phenomena. So at all times they realize all the ultimate nature of all phenomena, knowing that, and there's nothing that they do not realize in each and every single moment. So that's the meaning of the seventh line, that knows correctly all realities without exception. And the eighth line, Bhagavan, together with your entourage, please come here. So here now one is inviting all the Buddhas together with their retinues. And why is one doing so? In order to be able to accomplish virtue, so as to aid one's spiritual progression, in order to be of the greatest benefit to others. Buddhas and your retinue, please come here. Help me accumulate virtue in order to be of greater benefit to others.
So then, just to conclude, so what we've looked at tonight, we've looked at the end to these two verses of invocation. Before that, visualization, and included within that, the meaning of the various aspects of the visualization. But we started out by talking about the importance to generate a motivation first of bodhicitta, and then to cultivate the wisdom realizing emptiness. These two indispensable minds for the practice to be one of the Mahayana Dhamma, for the practice to create the causes to create the causes that will result in full and complete enlightenment. So having generated such a motivation of bodhicitta and then meditated on emptiness, then one is ready to engage in the visualization. And we spoke about visualizing the throne that's held by the eight snow lions, which represent the overcoming these eight fears. And then we visualize the lotus, the moon disk, the sun disk. And on top of that, our teacher who is in the visible, our teacher of the paths to cultivate within us, our teacher who's indivisible from Buddha Shakyamuni, we visualize before us an aspect of Buddha Shakyamuni. And from his heart going out in various directions, above him is Vajradhara and the lineage of blessings. To his right was Maitreya and the lineage of past conduct, and to his left was the lineage of Manjushri and the lineage of the profound view. And then surrounding him were all our other teachers, all the Buddhas, all the Bodhisattvas, etc. So that was the visualization. And then one
invites the guests here and recites the invocation prayer, and then one is engages in the accumulation of virtue, such as making offerings of water bowls or flowers or incense or mandala. But what's important here whilst making the offerings is to remain aware of one's motivation of bodhicitta and the wisdom understanding emptiness, being aware that one is engaging in this practice, this entire practice, for the sake of others. One needs to accumulate virtue so as to be of ever greater benefit to others through one's spiritual progression, so as to become a skilled guide who can lead others in the accomplishment of the causes of happiness and the elimination of the causes that lead to suffering. So with this wish to be of benefit to others, one engages in this entire practice, culminating in making offerings. And then just lastly to say, part of the, maybe you can say, the psychology of doing a practice in this way is when one gains the feeling that one's Lama is really present with one, that has a profound impact on one's mind. If you imagine being directly with one's teacher, before one's teacher, whether it's, say, His Holiness or Lama Zopa, then one will take great care with one's practice. One will make sure that one is engaging in it with sincerity and not with a distraction or with just a mere recitation. So therefore, with this understanding, one engages in such one uses such a skillful means. So that is a very brief summary of what we've looked at tonight. We'll continue from here next week with the line, an exceedingly fragrant bathhouse, where we'll look at the practice of making a bath offering and offering clothing and the like. So we're a little bit late, we're actually quite a lot late, so my apologies, I hope that hasn't made it difficult to get home. Also the weather's a bit difficult on the road, so we'll finish here then tonight. Thank you, and have a safe drive home.